Phyllis is your 63-year-old patient. A few years ago, she had a severe myocardial infarction, which you acutely managed, and she's been your patient ever since. Due to personal circumstances, she hasn't been able to make her last couple of checkup appointments, but now she comes to you at her family's insistence because she's been short of breath. She explains how she regularly walks to her sister's house, which is only 2 blocks away from her own home. But recently, she has to stop 3 to 4 times to catch her breath. And even worse, she explains how she's been waking up in the middle of the night gasping for air, which has been particularly scary for her. During the physical exam, you hear an S3 heart sound and detect 2+ lower extremity pitting edema. You review our office records and note that neither were present during previous appointments. What are you thinking in terms of diagnosis at this point? How severe is her disease? What grade is represented? How will you proceed with Phyllis's treatment? Hi, and welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Alex Dennis, and this is the brick on the foundations and frameworks of heart failure. Let's jump right in. After completing this section, you'll be able to 1. Define heart failure. 2. Describe the 4 functional classes of heart failure. 3. List and briefly describe the most common diseases causing heart failure, identifying ischemic cardiomyopathy as the most common in the United States. 4. Describe the 4 stages of left heart failure using the American College of Cardiology American Heart Association classification. And 5. Describe the clinical presentation of heart failure using the cold, warm, and wet dry paradigm. Let's begin. Heart failure is a syndrome in which the heart is unable to deliver blood to the rest of the body because of cardiac dysfunction. This is almost always due to some form of cardiomyopathy or diseased cardiac myocytes. You can categorize heart failure into groups by function, meaning systolic or non-systolic diastolic heart failure, and classified by the severity of symptoms. You can also categorize cardiomyopathies according to structure, for example, thick heart walls, enlarged ventricle cavity, thickened and stiffened sac around the heart, etc. Alternatively, you can categorize cardiomyopathy by cause, starting with ischemic cardiomyopathy, which is the most common cause by far, and then everything else, which we term non-ischemic cardiomyopathy. Non-ischemic cardiomyopathy includes a whole host of causes like valvular dysfunction, infiltrative diseases like hemochromatosis, and others. Part 1. Systolic or non-systolic heart failure. Systolic heart failure is the inability of the ventricle to pump blood. It is characterized by 3 things. First, there's reduced ejection fraction, EF, where EF is the fraction of blood ejected from a ventricle of the heart with each contraction. Then if there's reduced EF, there's increased end-diastolic volume, EDV, where EDV is the volume of blood in the ventricle at the end of the filling period, diastole, but before systole. And finally, there's decreased contractility, where contractility is the ability of the myocytes, the heart muscle fibers, to shorten and cause contraction. And that's consistent with our first point about reduced ejection fraction. Causes of systolic heart failure include ischemia, example myocardial infarction, and dilative cardiomyopathies, or thinning and weakening of the ventricles due to viruses or toxins. Non-systolic or diastolic heart failure is the inability of the ventricle to fill with blood. It is characterized by the following 3 things, pretty much the opposite of what we had in the case of systolic heart failure. First, there's preserved ejection fraction, and that's why diastolic heart failure is also referred to as heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. Then there's normal EDV, as opposed to greater EDV in systolic heart failure. And lastly, we have decreased ventricular compliance as opposed to contractility. Compliance is the ability of the heart muscle fibers to lengthen in response to pressure of the ventricle. So in other words, compliance is a change in volume divided by change in pressure, delta V over delta P. Decreased compliance impairs ventricular filling. Causes of non-systolic heart failure include chronic hypertension and hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy. Part 2. Symptoms, left-sided or right-sided. Heart failure symptoms can be distinguished as left-sided or right-sided. In reality, a lot of patients with heart failure have a mix of both right and left heart failure, especially because the most common cause of right heart failure is left heart failure. But still, each symptom can be attributed to a failing side. So depending on which side of the heart is affected, the symptoms can vary. The easiest way to think about the symptoms is to remember that defects on each side of the heart can cause a backup of blood. And so depending on what side you're looking at, you can infer where the blood is backing up. For instance, backup of blood from left-sided heart failure leads to congestion of pulmonary vasculature, resulting in orthopnea, which is shortness of breath when lying down, paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea, which is waking up breathless from sleep, and dyspnea, or shortness of breath with activity. On the other hand, blood from right-sided heart failure tends to back up into systemic circulation because the vena cava are what feed into the right heart, leading to hepatomegaly, jugular venous distension, and peripheral edema. Left-sided heart failure can cause backup of blood to the right heart and lead to right-sided heart failure. This is an important point to remember, so I'll say it again. The most common cause of right-sided heart failure is left-sided heart failure. Patients often initially present with left heart failure symptoms and then gradually progress to right heart symptoms. On rare occasions, primary lung disease causing pulmonary hypertension can cause high pressures and backup of blood in the right side of the heart. Eventually, this can lead to isolated right heart failure, a situation termed cor pulmonale. This is the only time right-sided heart failure symptoms occur without left-sided heart symptoms. Alright, let's do a quick review before moving on to the next part. What is the most common cause of right-sided heart failure? Left-sided heart failure is the most common cause of right-sided heart failure. And let's do another one. What is the medical term for when isolated right heart failure occurs as a result of pulmonary hypertension? That would be cor pulmonale.
Part 3. What causes heart failure? Heart failure can be caused by any condition that damages cardiac tissue and impairs cardiac function. Common causes include coronary artery disease, which is the most common cause, hypertension, idiopathic cardiomyopathy, and valvular heart disease. Less common causes include arrhythmias, collagen vascular diseases, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, myocarditis, pericarditis, postpartum cardiomyopathy, restrictive cardiomyopathy, and toxic cardiomyopathy. But it's crucial to remember that in the United States, by far the most common cause of heart failure is ischemia or lack of adequate oxygen delivery to the myocardium. We call this ischemic cardiomyopathy, and it's commonly seen after a myocardial infarction when cardiac myocytes die. In addition to these diseases that initiate heart failure, the process can be further aggravated by the body's response to heart failure. What happens is that decreased cardiac output activates the sympathetic nervous system and the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, RAS. And that's actually good in a setting where, say, you're bleeding out and you need to conserve water and salts to get blood to all your organs. But in the setting of heart failure, these compensatory mechanisms can actually worsen the progression of heart failure. The sympathetic nervous system tries to maintain organ perfusion despite a failing ventricle. Sympathetic activation increases stroke volume and heart rate and induces peripheral vasoconstriction to stabilize mean arterial perfusion pressure. And for a while, these mechanisms actually lead to a stable state called compensated heart failure. However, chronic sympathetic activity is associated with catecholamine cardiotoxicity, which changes cardiomyocytes structurally and functionally. This results in left ventricular dilation and systolic dysfunction from left ventricular remodeling. And this further decreases cardiac function and worsens heart failure. RAS activation further increases cardiac congestion by increasing fluid retention in the kidneys. RAS activation also increases sympathetic nervous system activity, which can lead to increased afterload. This is the load against which the heart must eject blood, which then makes it more difficult for the failing heart to pump. So we talked quite a bit about RAS, but in a few words, how does its activation worsen heart failure? RAS activation increases fluid retention, which worsens congestion and results in SNS activity, which increases afterload. Note that although the typical patient with heart failure has peripheral vasoconstriction as part of the compensation we just described, some patients with diseases causing severe peripheral vasodilation can develop extremely high cardiac outputs and associated fluid retention, leading to symptoms of heart failure, like edema, dyspnea, fatigue, even with normal myocardial function. This is termed high-output heart failure, where the ejection fraction is high, not depressed. Some causes of this condition include sepsis, severe anemia, and severe hyperthyroidism. Part 4. How do we measure the severity of heart failure? Currently, there are two main methods by which heart failure is classified. Heart failure can be graded using the American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association classification, ACC-AHA, or the New York Heart Association and NYHA classification. The ACC-AHA grades heart failure based on degree of structural dysfunction found on echocardiography and clinical symptoms. The grades range from no identifiable structural or functional abnormalities of the heart, which is grade A, to advanced structural heart disease, which is grade D. According to this classification, grade A heart failure patients have no identified structural or functional abnormalities of their heart and have never shown signs or symptoms of heart failure. but they are at high risk of developing heart failure because of the presence of conditions that are strongly associated with the development of heart failure. Grade B heart failure patients have evidence of structural heart disease that is strongly associated with the development of heart failure, but they have never shown signs or symptoms of heart failure. Patients with grade C heart failure have current or prior symptoms of heart failure associated with underlying structural disease. And finally, grade D heart failure patients have advanced structural heart disease and marked symptoms of heart failure at rest despite maximal medical therapy. They require more specialized interventions. The NYHA grades heart failure based on frequency of clinical symptomology with activity. Class 1 patients do not have any limitation on activity due to their heart failure. Class 2 patients have slight limitations on physical activity. Ordinary physical activities such as long walks or climbing a few flights of stairs can induce shortness of breath, fatigue, palpitations, or chest pain. Class 3 patients notice marked limitation on physical activities. Walking short distances such as 20 to 100 meters can cause symptoms. And lastly, Class 4 patients experience symptoms at rest and are unable to tolerate any physical activities. Before moving on, in a few words, how do the two classifications we just described differ? The American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association classification grades heart failure based on structural dysfunction of the heart and clinical symptoms, while the New York Heart Association classification focuses on frequency of clinical symptomology with activity. Because the NYHA classification focuses on symptomology, it's referred to as functional classification and is the most widely used classification system for heart failure. It's important to pause here to define two related but different terms. Heart failure is the clinical syndrome of signs and symptoms we just described. Cardiomyopathy is the disease state of a damaged ventricle. Although you'll hear people use these terms interchangeably, they're not exactly the same thing. A person with cardiomyopathy may only have mildly depressed ejection fraction and may have no symptoms whatsoever. That person has cardiomyopathy, but they are not in overt heart failure and would be listed as grade A or B or class 1 in the systems that we just described. So although nearly all patients with heart failure have cardiomyopathy, not all patients with cardiomyopathy have symptomatic heart failure. Part 5. What is the warm, cold, and wet-dry paradigm of heart failure? The ACC and AHA and NYHA classification systems characterize patients with heart failure in the long term, over months to years. However, there's another way to characterize patients with heart failure in the short term from day to day. This method is based on two simple clinical findings, and we call it the warm, cold, and wet-dry paradigm of heart failure. This paradigm is most useful for assessing patients who are in the office or coming to the hospital. It helps clinicians have a snapshot of this moment in time. Wet or dry refers to the extracellular volume status of the patient, specifically whether they have congestion in the pulmonary or right-sided circulation. Wet patients typically have pulmonary edema, jugular venous distension, lower extremity edema, or abdominal ascites or fullness. Warm or cold refers to the temperature of the patient's extremities. Warm is the normal state of a healthy individual with appropriate cardiac output. A cold patient has either low cardiac output or high systemic vascular resistance. Both of these reduce perfusion to the extremities. The importance of characterizing patients in this way is that it helps us determine clinically how to treat them. A wet patient needs diuretics, a dry patient does not. A cold patient is very sick and might need medication or mechanical support for their low cardiac output. A warm patient does not need such intense therapy. And remember, patients can change day to day in this paradigm. For example, if a patient comes into the hospital warm and wet and receives diuretics, they can quickly become warm and dry. We made it! Let's review what we've gone through in this audio break, starting off with a simple question. What is the definition of heart failure? Heart failure is the dysfunction of ventricles resulting in the inability of the heart to deliver blood to the rest of the body. How do systolic and diastolic heart failure differ? Systolic heart failure is the inability of the ventricles to pump blood, which results in a low ejection fraction, while diastolic heart failure, also called heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, is the inability of the ventricles to fill with blood. And likewise, how do the symptoms of right and left heart failure differ? Symptoms of left heart failure include orthopnea, which is shortness of breath when lying down, paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea, waking up breathless from sleep, and dyspnea, shortness of breath with activity. Right-sided heart failure symptoms include hepatomegaly, jugular venous distension, and peripheral edema. Recall that the symptoms are inferable from where the blood is backed up. What are the four functional classes of heart failure? Functional class of heart failure refers to the NYHA classification. In this system, patients go from having class 1 heart failure if they're virtually asymptomatic to class 4 if they're essentially bedridden from their heart failure. What are the most common diseases causing heart failure, and bonus points for the most common one in the United States? Any injury to the heart can result in heart failure. That includes coronary artery disease, hypertension, idiopathic cardiomyopathy, and valvular heart disease. And then compensatory mechanisms such as sympathetic nervous system activation and RAS activation worsen heart failure. Ischemia is the most common cause of cardiomyopathy in the United States. Remember, ischemia is lack of oxygen supply to the myocardium. What are the stages of left heart failure according to the American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association classification based on? The ACC and AHA grades heart failure based on structural dysfunction of the heart and clinical symptoms. Grade A heart failure patients have no evidence of structural heart disease but have predisposing conditions of heart failure. On the other end of the spectrum, grade D patients have advanced structural heart disease and marked symptoms of heart failure at rest despite maximum medical therapy. What are the clinical presentations of heart failure using the cold, warm, and wet dry paradigm? The warm, cold, and wet dry paradigm of heart failure helps clinicians assess patients as a snapshot of a moment in time and determine how to treat them. Thinking back to Phyllis now, who's been experiencing shortness of breath upon mild activity and paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea. Reflect on what you now know about classifying heart failure as systolic or non-systolic. What is your diagnosis for her? How will you explain this condition to her? An echocardiogram reveals a low ejection fraction consistent with systolic heart failure and with her history of myocardial infarction. You diagnose Phyllis with systolic heart failure, NYHA class 2. You tell her that this type of heart failure occurs when the left ventricle is weakened, in her case likely from her prior heart attack. You explain to Phyllis that you'll prescribe medications that will reduce her leg swelling and medications that will help her heart beat more efficiently. When you see her back in the office 1 week later, her shortness of breath has improved and her lower extremity edema has resolved. Alright, that's a wrap for this one. If you take away anything from this audiobook, let it be that heart failure is actually a syndrome, that is, a condition characterized by a set of associated symptoms. That's why even though the pathophysiology behind systolic and diastolic heart failure are vastly different, they're both still considered heart failure because patients mostly present in the same way. Thanks for listening! You can enjoy the full BRIC experience online at www.usmle-rx.com. complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, mnemonics, and active learning. So go check that out if you haven't already. Until next time!